Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello. Welcome to another episode of Telling Everybody Everything. You might notice from me a little spring in my step, a little extra joy in my voice, and that's because I am alive. I am alive after a terrible, terrible illness. I'm not sure if I had norovirus or just good old-fashioned run-of-the-mill food poisoning. They say statistically that when you think you have the flu, you actually have food poisoning. But I'm not going to get into any of the details of that, just in case someone's listening and they're trying to enjoy a meal right now. Maybe you have a funny tummy yourself. Maybe you're just a squeamish person. Also, my listeners, you're probably on Ozempic. So I don't want to do anything that's going to trigger you, push you over the edge. I'm going to tell you what happened. All hits, no misses. I'm not going to say anything gross, just so that we're clear. Last week was a wonderful week. Parental Guidance was wrapping up on WTV. If you didn't watch it on the W Network, you can stream all episodes on UK TV Play. And I was handing over Monday nights at 9 p.m. to Comedy Central, where I appear on a new show called Rosie Jones Out of Order alongside my very esteemed co-captain, Judy Love. Rosie and I were promoting the show and doing the little press rounds. We got to do a bunch of fun things. The girls all got together. We hugged. We reminisced. It was fantastic. Judy Love's very busy. She just had a sellout show at the Palladium. If you haven't seen Judy Love on tour, you missed your chance this tour. Get a ticket early next tour. She is just so funny all the time. And one of the many hats Judy Love wears is one of the loose women in her daytime slot. So Rosie and I were very happy to pop by and promote the show on there. I had a break in between Loose Women and my evening gig, which was hosting a gala for the Prince's Trust. The Prince's Trust is a foundation started by King now Charles, and yes, they will be changing the name of the Prince's Trust to the King's Trust in 2026. It's a formidable charity that helps to get young people into work. Statistics show that when you come out of college and you don't have a job, that leads to low paid or no jobs when you're older. You sort of get in the rut of like, oh, well, I guess I'm unemployable. And that never lifts for some people. So the Prince's Trust do a variety of wonderful things for young people, but this is their focus. And it was incredible to be asked to host the dinner. In between, I was going to go home, but then I looked at the traffic. London's always being dug up. And I said to Bobby, do you know what? I might be up to an hour and a half in the car back. Then I'll be an hour and a half with my kids. And then I'll have to get straight back in the car to go to my evening thing. The kids are getting bigger. I'm going to get a hotel right across from Loose Women. BBC Studios is located at White City, where there is a White City Soho house. Listeners might remember that I recently re-became a member by slagging them off. They reached out to me and they said, Catherine, you slagged off Soho Farmhouse on your podcast. We didn't mind that one bit. Would you like to be a member again? And I said, damn it. Yes, I would. Because I think they have tasteful interiors. It's a nice place. And they have nice hotel rooms. And I thought, I've got a tour coming up. I'm just going to spend some time in the city, have a nap maybe, because someone's always sick in our house. Nobody sleeps through the night. And then you meet me and we'll go to the Prince's Trust gala dinner at the gorgeous Peninsula London Hotel together. Bobby said, great idea. And I don't mean to throw Soho House White City in the shit here, because again, I cannot confirm that I had food poisoning. What I can confirm is I had a delightful meal. I ordered the chicken salad in the Japanese restaurant on level 8. And that is like a lovely ginger miso dressing, which is like my favorite dressing, on these rosoloso leaves. I forget what they're called, but they're those leaves that are really purple and green. The absolute other end of the scale to the shit rocket weed that you serve in this country. Really delicious, and some grilled chicken. It was just such a yummy salad. I didn't have pork. I didn't have fish. Some of that was going around the table. Oh, and yes, I did share edamame with my friends. It seems as though Soho House White City are totally not responsible for what happened afterwards, because I checked back with everyone at the lovely lunch and no one was ill. And so why would it just be mine? Although I looked up food poisoning statistically, you would think, like, what is the highest cause? Is it shellfish? Is it just regular fish, chicken, maybe uncooked pork, vegetables? Number one commercial food poisoning cause is lettuce. Unwashed lettuce. What did I have? A salad. Rosoloso. It seemed washed. It tasted washed. Again, I am explicitly not putting any responsibility on the shoulders of Soho House White City. I had a lovely lunch. But could they be forgiven for poisoning me after what I said about Soho Farmhouse on my podcast? Maybe this was their plan all along, to lure me in with the promise of a spicy new free membership, access into Soho House, all the Soho houses worldwide. Oh, Catherine, we heard what you said on Soho Farmhouse on your podcast. Come be a member again. We'll show you how much you miss being here. Oh, yes, I do miss being there. I love Soho House. And then bam, hit me with the listeria. I'm just saying it might have happened, but there are other suspects at play. I went to the hotel room, a lovely tiny hotel room that I booked, just to lay down, do some personal development, social media on my phone, maybe have a little nap before it was time to get up and go to the awards. Bobby joined me and he had a little pizza. He felt fine. I ate nothing else the night before or that day. Nothing. Not a grape, not a drop. I didn't have a tea at Soho BBC Studios when I was doing Loose Women. I had nothing else. This is the only thing that I ate. And because I wanted to really make a splash at these awards, because of course it would be photographed by Hello Magazine, the world's finest celebrity photographer Dave Bennett would be in attendance, Rod Stewart and Jules Holland would be performing. It was going to be a great night. It was black tie. Bobby looked really handsome. I packed with me a corset, a 22-inch waist corset. I've lost a lot of weight since the babies were born. My waist is not 22 inches. My trousers are probably mostly 25, but I thought to myself, I can get my waist to 22 inches. This is an old corset that I pulled out of a drawer. It had never actually fit me before, and I really did have to pull, but eventually I got it on, and I was very proud. Like, yes, this corset fits me. I'm going to have the teeny tiniest waist. I came out of the bathroom. Bobby was like, oh my God, you look sick. I said, thank you. Little did he know how foreshadowing this comment would be. I get dressed and seconds later, I feel unwell. And I think, huh, this corset's quite tight. I did just have lunch. It was only a salad. But maybe 22 inches is a bridge too far. I walked over to the window and Bobby said I just got quiet. I wasn't my usual, like, bang, bang, bang. You know, I'm always banging on about something to do with something. You know, you tune in for that shit every week. But the podcast that is our marriage had stopped. And Bobby said I was just quiet as he finished getting ready and packing. And then I teetered down to the car. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't feel right, but I thought I could make it. I thought this feeling will pass. My food is just being like compressed now along with my organs in this 22-inch corset. I'm going to be fine in seconds. I look at my phone as we're getting to the car to find the plate number. And I see that the Peninsula London have sent us a Bentley, like a forest green, shiny, stunning Bentley with cream interiors and a lovely driver called Tim. And I thought, oh God, I don't know if someone in my delicate condition should be inside a Bentley with cream interiors. And so I made friends with the driver quickly. I said, Tim, I'm going to be honest with you. You won't hear a lot from me on this journey. I feel quite sick. I'm wearing a corset, but I'll be able to give you plenty of warning. I think it's going to go fine. If it's not, there'll be a heads up for me and I'll need you to pull over. And Tim was very professional. People have apparently puked in Tim's car before, because he's like, all right, I got it. Say no more. And we start driving. I'm silent. And then I made a game time decision. After only about 10 minutes in the corset, I decided I needed to rip it off. And so I did my seatbelt behind me so that the car thought I was wearing a seatbelt. And I arched my back And little by little, Hook and I at one time, I unhooked this prison that my waist and organs were living in. As soon as I took off the corset, I expected to feel relief, but I did not feel relief. The voices in my head started getting faster, more chatty. That's a warning to me. Catherine, you're going to be sick. I tried opening the window. It was too late. I said, gentlemen, I need you to pull over. I know this is a nice car. Don't worry. I had a backup bag. And as soon as the plans had been made to pull over, I was sick in the bag. I'm a quiet, sick person. Like, I think I could have maybe slipped it past Tim at least, but Bobby could see me in plain view. And I don't know, you could probably smell it. But anyway, I was just sick, like pure salad. It was like someone had mulched the salad for a baby bird. There was nothing else in that sick. It was just the exact salad that I'd eaten. And then I handed the bag to Bobby, and the car was now stationary, and Bobby went and disposed of it in a public bin outside. I said, sorry, gentlemen, I flew too close to the sun with that corset. It won't happen again. It won't happen again. I mean, when I tell you that things got worse, I arrived at the event. I thought everything was fine. My corset was off. I'd just been sick. I was feeling on top of the world. I did some press interviews. I spoke to Hello Magazine. And then I had to do a sound check. Now, during the sound check on stage, I felt a bit sick. Now I thought, is this because I'm hosting a Prince's Trust event and there are very important people in the room? Tom Hiddleston would be... No, I definitely didn't feel sick because he was going to be there. He doesn't make me nervous. Naomi Watts was to be there. Incredible. Oh, no, it wasn't Naomi Watts. Naomi Harris. Even better. Rod Stewart, Jules Holland, like I said, Mylene Klass was at our table. That beautiful actor, Luke Evans, was at our table. Fern Cotton was at our table. It was an exciting night. And I felt my stomach flipping. Now, is that because my nerves are back and I'm a young comic again? No, 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 Catherine, no, you need to run to the loo and be sick again. I was sick again. I thought, no, how is this happening to me? Because usually when you get on stage, all of your like sort of normal bodily functions shut down because you're in flight or fright mode, I guess, or whatever it's called. Fight or flight. Yeah, fright. And even if you feel sick, you know, there have been times I've had a headache or I felt unwell before a tour show. It just shuts off like a switch and you are able to do the show. Not on this occasion. I thought, all right, well, that'll be the last time. There was just a bit more residual unwellness from the corset. Oh, and by the way, it was not a great bathroom to be sick in because it was such a beautiful bathroom at the Peninsula London. And they had those Japanese toilets that like know what's going on. They open on their own and they're warm and they have like a spray and they know when to flush. Like they're just these really futuristic toilets. And they had attendants in the bathroom too. So it wasn't like a low-key place to be sick. But fine, I thought this is definitely the end of it. I'll get myself a ginger ale. The night goes on. Bobby was drinking champagne. There was white wine. And I just thought, no, I don't want one of those in the drinks reception. Finally, we sat down and the starters came out and I just knew tonight was not my night. I just thought, oh, no, I'm still sick. I can't touch any of this. So I was up and down on stage and back in my seat all throughout the night hosting. And I cannot tell you the fear in my soul when I was up on stage with like very important people. Ralph Fiennes next to me on stage. And I'm just thinking this sick valve is not shutting off. Like I still feel like I could be absolutely sick in front of everyone right now. The panic of that I've just never experienced in my life. Luckily, I was able to make it to the toilet every time. And when I say every time, I mean like 10 times. I mean, there was a guy by the reception between where the dinner was being held and the washrooms, and he was laughing at me by the end of it, being like, you're pregnant again, Catherine. I was like, don't you let my husband hear you say that. And I was just so sick again and again and again. And by the grace of God, everyone could tell that I wasn't drunk. So the people who did know I was being sick just knew that I was really in a bad way. And then a sound engineer said to me, Catherine, if you would like to leave, because I'm sure at this point people are like, why is this woman risking everyone around her by staying here? But norovirus hadn't really crossed my mind at that point. And neither had food poisoning, if I'm honest. I just thought that I had like ruptured a spleen or something from this 22-inch corset. I was blaming it on my own actions with the corset. But as time went on, I was like, nah, like this would have ended long ago. If you're a doctor, by the way, and you can tell me that you can throw up for 24 hours due to 10 minutes of a 22-inch corset, please let me know. Please let me know. Because Soho House White City can't take the even hint of bad press that it might have been them. But it might not have been them. But anyway, the crescendo of me feeling sick, and like credit to the people at my table, I know that Miley in class is a really good, talented, wonderful, genius person, but she took time out of her night to insist that I drink a flat Coke. She was like, you look green, like something's up, let me get you flat Coke. And I was like, nothing can be done at this point, Mylene. The servers are coming around and there's this beautiful filet of beef that I hadn't touched. And they were like, is something the matter, madame? I'm like, no. They were straight out of Beauty and the Beast. I was like, I am just sick. Nothing is wrong with the food. Then at the end, it was just about to be the Rod Stewart and Jules Holland performance. Songs from their new album, along with their wonderful orchestra. I went to the back to be sick one more time because this was my plan. I was like fitting in sick in like when the courses were happening and in between my hosting duties, I was just being sick. I went to the back and the sound engineer was like, Catherine, we have a contingency plan if you want to go. And I was like, never, because I've never left work sick once in my life. But I was stopped on the way to the loo by a wonderful man who was like, you're Canadian. I went to university in Toronto. And I was like, oh, yeah. And then a woman was like, oh, Catherine, can I get a picture with you? And I was like, And I knew I had seconds to spare, but I tried to keep it professional. I buttoned it up. I took a photo with this lady and I thought, okay, I'm like, you know, when you're sick, you're planning out all your moves in your mind and like calculating. You all of a sudden become like Goodwill Hunting, where you could do like physics with your mind, calculus just in seconds that you could never do before. I was like, okay, I'll say hi to this guy. I'll say like about this many words and then I'll take a picture with this lady. That's no problem. And then I'm this many meters from the bathroom. And she looked at the picture and she said, actually, do you mind if we take another one in front of the painting? Because King Charles had generously donated a work of art to be auctioned for Prince's Trust charity. And I turned to her and I said, no, I'm going to be sick. And she was like, oh, all right. Because this is the thing about rich people and posh people. They're just always polite. And they're like, ah, all right. Like she acted like it was the most normal thing in the world. So thank you so much to that lady for not being horrified as anyone else would have been. She just took it in her stride, like, ah, you're going to be sick. Well, very nice to take the first picture anyway. And then I had to put my hand over my mouth and fucking run. And these are the details that I won't get into. Suffice to say, I was sick once on the way to the bathroom, but nobody knew. And then as I pushed open the door to the beautiful bathrooms, a woman in a stunning gown came out, and I was honestly like, I mean, she saw me be sick in my hand, basically, and was like, oh, it didn't get on her. And then I made it just to the loo, just made it. And I was just sick again. And it was getting, you know, the intervals between sick were getting shorter and the being sick was getting more violent. And I text Bobby from the bathroom and I was like, we gotta go. And then you get a magical period of euphoria in between being sick where you feel like that's never going to happen again. I'm on top of the world. So as soon as it was over, I was tempted to be like, I'll finish the night. But then I saw the sound engineer again and I said, listen, Mylene Klass and Fern Cotton are at my table. There are two cue cards left in the night. I know that they would only be so obliged. Like they would love to finish this night for me. Please, I got to go. And then I got back in Tim's Bentley. And I wasn't sick again until I got home. And then I was repeatedly sick all night, horrifically sick. And Bobby slept with the kids. And I have to say, like, he had the kids the next day too. The next day was a complete write-off. I was supposed to film something. I called in sick at 3 a.m. to an 8 a.m. shoot, just being like, this has never happened. And I don't even know what happens when someone like me doesn't show up, because I was being filmed alone. And so they would have production people coming into work that day. They would have crew, camera crew. They would have hired equipment, hired the venue, runners. Like, I guess insurance then steps in and covers that day for the production company so they don't make a loss. Because I fill out all these insurance forms on every job before I do it. I suppose that's what it's for. And then a doctor with an old-fashioned doctor's bag, like a brown leather doctor's bag like you would see in a Doc McStuffins cartoon, a beautiful woman of some Indian heritage came to my house. She was stunning. She was kind. She gave me an anti-sickness injection. And guys, that is what wealthy people do when they're sick. No need to ride out the norovirus. You call a private doctor to come to your home for £250 and give you an injection. And then I slept the entire night. And I woke up feeling on top of the world. On top of the world. I felt grateful to my husband. I felt grateful to God. I felt just so much gratitude for my life. Because when you are on the bathroom floor, after having been sick for like 18, 19, 20 hours, every like 40 minutes was the longest interval I had between sick. You just think to yourself, like, your health is so precious. Like, you do not know. You could be seconds away from death any day. And the lady, the doctor lady, the woman doctor, when she came, in addition to giving me the anti-sickness drug, she said, I could do a blood test if you like, and then we'll know for sure whether you have norovirus or whether you had food poisoning, because one set of results will have bacteria and another set of results will have like low white blood cells from fighting an infection or something like to that effect. And I just said, no, I don't need to know why. I just need it to be done. And I am leaning towards, I hate to say it, but I am leaning towards food poisoning because it was so violent and so fast. And also none of the kids got sick and Bobby didn't get sick. And presumably if I had norovirus, I would have incubated days before when I was with the family all weekend. So what the hell? What was it? I guess it was the push that I needed to take my life more seriously. I was on TikTok for a lot of that time. Just after throwing up, I didn't feel sick right away and then I could look at a screen. There was a lot that was just a blur and I couldn't look at a screen. But I fell down this rabbit hole alleging that, brace yourself, because this is going to take a bit of unpacking. I won't get into the forensic detail that some of these TikTokers have gotten into, nor do I want to tread into the legal waters that they're treading into, because all of this is allegation. But Sean Combs, P. Diddy, Puff Daddy, as I grew up knowing him, is in some serious legal trouble. There are multiple allegations against him. But long story short, it is being alleged that he is, P. Diddy, is the Black Epstein, hip-hop's answer to Jeffrey Epstein. And that is only if you believe the theory that is also unproven, that on Epstein Island, where Jeffrey Epstein and his guests were, I think, factually or allegedly at this point, I don't even know like what the legal exact term is. I'm just always going to say allegedly just in case I get any detail wrong. I don't need to be sued. Young women were being abused. It is alleged that this was done explicitly and it was like a bargaining tool for powerful people and politicians to have to blackmail them. So it's alleged that Jeffrey Epstein and whomever his associates would set these guys up to be filmed in compromised situations so that they could be extorted later for use or for their power. So let's say I'm Catherine Ryan. I can maybe get you booked on a comedy show, but you have a video of me doing something illegal. Well, now I'm definitely getting you booked on the comedy show because you are blackmailing me with that video. Do you see what I mean? So if you haven't heard this, this is what a lot of people think went on at Epstein Island, that it was even like government sanctioned or higher than government. I don't know who was like pulling the strings on this thing, but a lot of people believe that that's what Epstein Island was. Puff Daddy now, P. Diddy, sorry, is the latest name. There's been lots of allegations in the past about sex and coercion, and unfortunately there are some really serious allegations from his ex-partner Cassie about sexual abuse, but there's always this conversation in the hip-hop world about homosexuality and how it's like the worst thing that you can be in hip-hop, and that's why they're so homophobic. They're like, oh, that's gay, don't be gay. And it's almost a case of thou dost protest too much, because there are lots of rumors that a lot of people in hip hop are gay. And why wouldn't they? Like, gay has been around forever. I think homophobia is relatively new. And this TikToker is going like so deep forensically into it. I'm sure you can find it. If you look up like P. Diddy conspiracy theories, there is going to be a wealth of anti-Semitic information online and just other information online. And I'm not explicitly a conspiracy theorist, but I do entertain a lot of these things. I'm like, all right, let's hear it. Is that P. Diddy was working alongside Clive Davis to get artists in their circle of like alleged sexual whatever was going on. But then if you didn't participate, and this is backed up by Cat Williams, who's been on podcasts recently saying something to the effect that if you didn't participate, then you were outside the circle. And then if you did participate, that they would have something to blackmail you on later on. And da 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 da. And it was interesting to me that there would be a point then in amplifying the message of like, don't be gay, it's gay to be gay, don't be gay, because a lot of the materials that they have on people are gay. And they want to make it a bad thing so that you're more under your control because there's materials of you doing it. I don't know. It's just absolutely crazy. And I lost almost an entire 10 hours to this. This TikToker goes through the lawsuit, which is public record, even if it's just allegations. And it's got everything. I mean, it's got photos, it's got names, it's got dates. There's like a crime scene photo. It also alleges that Diddy had recording devices, cameras in every single room of his house. It alleges there were parties with household name celebrities who are named in the lawsuit, underage girls. It says drinks were served, drugs were given, drinks were spiked. The person bringing about this latest huge lawsuit, and again, it's just opinions. This guy could be totally crazy. Just because something is alleged, it doesn't make it fact, but it's a music producer called Rodney Jones. He alleges that he has hundreds of hours of backstage footage and audio recordings of Mr. Combs, his staff, and other celebrities engaging in serious illegal activity. It gets pretty crazy. There are even allegations that Diddy ordered the hit on Tupac and that the CIA were funding and even writing gangster rap to fill prisons. So like NWA, for example, had lyrics that were anti-police. This sort of alleges, or the rabbit holes that you find through this, allege that the CIA would write or approve or deliver those lyrics as like a master plan to dismantle communities. I mean, listen, this is the trouble with conspiracy theories, is that they just never stop. You just go and you go and you go. And I would not have even come across this had it not been for my corset disease / norovirus / food poisoning. So make of it what you will. If anything, it is certainly very fantastical, wild, wacky, a distraction, just something to look at. Very interesting, if nothing else. My good friend, collaborator, and producer of this podcast, Andrew Johnston, has suggested that I also talk about the conspiracies surrounding Kate Middleton's disappearance. And I say that in quotation marks. The palace announced that she had abdominal surgery a little while ago here on the ground. There are people speaking about it, just being like, why has she been away so long? What kind of abdominal surgery? And it's not in any nasty way. We love Kate Middleton. We want to know that she's well. And then Prince William didn't show up to an event. He used, I believe, a crest that was his personal crest on that letter explaining his absence instead of the couple's crest, and all these other conspiracy theories, including but not limited to Kate Middleton is Banksy, because Banksy has also not made any paintings in the time that Kate Middleton has been gone. I'm not getting myself in the shit on this because I just think she, whatever's going on, if we were supposed to know about it, we would know about it. If she wanted us to know, there would be more information. You know, the palace are very protective with what's going on, and they'll release what they want to release when they want to release it. I personally have no opinion. Where do you think she is? Do you think that my beloved queen of all queens, Kate Middleton, is going to resurface soon with an explanation? Not that she owes anybody an explanation, but like a reason for her absence. Are you worried about Kate Middleton? Please send me an email, tellingeverybodyeverything@gmail.com. And in the interim, Kate Middleton, I know she listens to this podcast. She does not. We wish you well. I hate to do this because I don't want to see Glasgow or its good name come to any harm. Glasgow, I'm very excited to come and visit you on tour, but you know your bullshit Willy Wonka Chocolate Factory immersive experience has gone viral. It's worldwide news now, and I feel so sorry for the promoter who probably had all the best intentions of making this immersive experience wonderful, but at £35 a ticket, mate, you're going to have to do better than a bunch of spelling mistakes on the advertising. The writing was on the wall. Like, people traveled for hours with their kids to see a few jelly beans and half a cup of lemonade. Children decked out in Wonka-themed costumes more ornate than the actual performers were crying with disappointment, and parents were so enraged by the false advertising that the police were called when refunds were not offered on the spot, and the event was stopped before the end of the day. It was meant to be, I think, ongoing for at least the weekend. By Saturday at noon, this thing was shut down. Two stars emerged, though. Comedian Paul Connell, who had the unlucky task of playing Wonka for 3.5 hours straight, And this lovely girl whose TikToks I've watched, she's been dubbed Meth Lab Oompa Loompa. Her name is Kirsty Patterson, and she's now had her most demeaning gig immortalized via meme for the rest of eternity. And it doesn't even look like her, the little screen grabs I've seen of her. The real girl is so beautiful. And look, when you are a young, up-and-coming actor, a gig's a gig, a job's a job. And I respect you, Kirsty and Paul, for taking these gigs. But I mean, it just looked like an absolute shambles. If you haven't seen it, just search Glasgow Willy Wonka Chocolate Factory Immersive Experience. It was crazy. Genuinely looked like an abandoned warehouse. The promoter said that he was expecting this holographic flooring that didn't came, and there were delivery delays and problems. There were a couple mushrooms kicking around. Like, it just looked so brutally low rent that you do have to take accountability for your event and look around to go, is this suitable to open the doors to the public and charge them £35 a ticket? Do I have an immersive experience that is going to delight people who have just been traveling with toddlers in a car on iPads in the cold? And that's the thing too, it's cold. So parents are desperate to find something to do. And I cannot explain how much effort it takes just to leave the house with small kids. I mean, my kids are not Willy Wonka fans. They never will be. I actually find the whole movie very creepy. But if I had taken them, like some people that I read online had traveled 4 hours and then their kids arrive. And sometimes you know something's shit, but your kids don't know it's shit. For example, and I don't want to come down hard on this place, in Essex, there is a wonderful theme park called Old MacDonald's Farm. It is just off Junction 15, off the M25. And I think it's fantastic. Fantastic. Objectively, as a celebrity who's been to Disneyland, and I, you know, like I can take my kids to the best things ever if I wanted to. There were parts of this thing that you might think were a little bit shit. They didn't have, you know, the breadth of animals that we might experience at Willow's Farm in St. Albans, for example. And some of the rides were a little bit retro. And the food, you know, like theme park food is always food. It's a bit nee-nee-nee-nee. However, my kids were enthralled. I loved it. The kids loved it. It wasn't crowded when we went. I've heard it's very crowded in the summer, but it was just exactly what my kids wanted to do. There were two deer. My kids didn't need to see three deer. My kids didn't need to see like a kangaroo, an orangutan. My kids aren't looking for a giraffe. They liked this little hut full of fat rabbits. They didn't give a shit. They loved going on this train ride. And the train conductor was the most enthusiastic man in the entire world. And he was going around the park even before he kicked off the rides at 11. He was like, anybody want to come on the train? Chugga chugga choo choo. He was just into it. And I looked at him and I felt inspired. I was like, that's how I like tackle each day too, sir. And the kids loved it there, loved it there. So it's one thing as a parent with a discerning eye being like, oh, I've probably overpaid for Willy Wonka chocolate immersive experience in Glasgow. Fine. But if your kids even know it's shit, if your kids know it's shit, then it's got to be total shit. Because for some reason, everything for kids is a bit shit. And I don't understand why that is. Like if companies were smart, they would, you know, because every time I've even been away or stayed at a theme park, stayed in a hotel, like nothing really is up to my standard. There's always like kind of a crap arcade. And I know that they're trying to make themselves accessible to different families and they don't want kids ruining really nice stuff. But there should be like something very, very, very nice for kids. Because how have amusement park operators and retailers and everyone else not realized by now that money we will spend on our kids is limitless compared to what we will spend on ourselves. I might look at something or look at an experience or a hotel or a show or be like, nah, I don't really need to do that. But if it's going to delight my kids, then I will bust my ass to make it happen. Similarly, if my kids hate it, then yes, I'm having a Glaswegian fight in the car park and police are going to be have to called if I don't get my refund. You don't pull that shit in Glasgow. You know what I mean? Maybe try to scam people with your Charlie and the Chocolate Factory bullshit experience in like Suffolk where they won't break your nose. Glasgow's the wrong place. I mean, he probably called the police on himself. Who needs the police when Scott Swift is in town? Daddy of the year, Taylor Swift's dad, I mean, came to the rescue. Every part-time Swiftie knows Taylor's dad travels with her. He attends every one of her concerts and even makes the rounds in the crowd giving fans Taylor brand guitar picks. He also goes goblin mode, apparently, on pushy paparazzos. A photographer by the name of Ben McDonald claims that while trying to get an innocent snap of Taylor disembarking a yacht so he could sell it to Getty and put food on his table, Scott Swift straight up sucker punched him. It's all he said Swift's team said at this point, as astoundingly, there is no footage of this assault. Apparently, Australian paps aren't winning the World Paparazzi Championships anytime soon. What do you feel about this? Do you think it's ever appropriate to punch a paparazzo when he's taking pictures of your daughter? I like that Daddy Bear came to the rescue. Violet is just as excited about the prospect of meeting Taylor Swift's parents at the Taylor Swift concert in London as she is about meeting Taylor Swift herself. She wants a bracelet. She wants a guitar pick. She wants to get invited backstage. She wants it all. Will she be a Swiftie still by the time the Taylor Swift tour comes to London in seemingly the year 2030? She's released a whole new album and she's still touring the last one. I really got to get my shit together. How is she able to do this? One reason, no kids. And she's wildly talented. Let's listen to some words from our sponsors. And when we return, I will get into your letters. I will see what questions, comments, and dilemmas you have for us this week.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Last week, I entertained the idea of getting Fred's tonsils out, and Joanne has written that I received a surprising number of emails about that. And Joanne adds, for you to know, because I didn't really get into it, we obviously have some special ENT issues in our family, which people aren't aware of. When my tonsils were taken out at age 14, the ENT said they were the biggest he had ever seen in his life. A decade later, I ended up on the operating table again to have my sinuses cleared out and expanded. She said everything in there was just so tiny and underdeveloped. Hopefully, the Dutch genes will have diluted our inbred Irish faces, but maybe your gut is right on Fred needing the surgery. Yeah, Joanne, I remember you even had orthodontic issues because your tonsils were so big that they depressed the back of your tongue and then made your upper palate a little bit underdeveloped. Correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, I don't know how much of this I remember from being like 5 years old, but I feel like I got the gist of it right. Guys, be aware that I don't take my kids to the doctor for basically anything. I understand that sometimes intervention is required when they need antibiotics, though that is not often. I also understand not to just go ripping organs out. But when I tell you that we are thinking about having Fred's tonsils out, it is because they are fucking enormous. And if there's anything different that can be done, I'm totally open to it. I haven't even had the appointment yet. So don't get your panties in a twist, but like, I totally get what you're saying. One of the listeners last week wrote in about pregnant at 14 was the gist of it, basically. And so many of you wrote back about that. This young woman was pregnant on holiday at 14, and she was navigating sort of how and when to tell people in her life that she was abused, because you don't get pregnant at 14 unless you are abused. And we used to call it something different when I was 14. We'd be like, well, I had a holiday romance. No, you were abused. Catherine, as a religious TEET, Telling Everybody Everything listener, I felt compelled to write in today after hearing about the woman who wants to tell her parents she was sexually assaulted. I no longer use the R word just because I feel like it's really triggering for people, but it's been used here. And she uses it in reference to her own sexual assault. I was sexually assaulted at 12. My mom found the morning after pill in my room, and I lied, and I said I'd slept with a friend's friend. This year, at age 34, I finally told my mom after years of on and off therapy for anxiety. So to the woman who wrote in, you say that your parents have always fully supported you, and they still will do that now. Trust your gut. I understand the feelings of guilt and shame. I know it doesn't help for someone else to tell you that you shouldn't feel that. As you referenced in your letter, it's hardwired in us women to please and to protect. However, you have a better understanding of what happened to you now, which can take a long time to process, and you could just be at the start of that. Telling my mom has lifted such a weight off me. She didn't have a total breakdown as I thought she would. She listened, she supported, and she loves me. Maybe your parents could be the first step, and in time, your daughter will understand too. After all, young girls have a much better understanding these days of this kind of stuff than we did, although she may need some support of her own about it. The most important thing is to start trying to be kind to yourself, because that is ultimately the hardest part. This is a wonderful letter. And you know, I was just at an event the other night where I was speaking to mothers from different families, loads of different shapes of families. And no, they were not at all talking about sexual assault, but they were talking about some heavy issues like trigger warning. I mean, I don't really understand where how the trigger warning is going to prepare you for me saying the word suicide, because now I've said it and I just said trigger warning beside it. But people who'd lost parents to suicide, and also people who were having babies via sperm donor or egg donor. And you wouldn't think that those things would intertwine, but they were talking about themselves as children, and they were also talking about caring for children. And they'd read a lot of books on the subject, and books about people who were from donor sperm or donor eggs and who are now grown up, because that science has obviously been around long enough now that there are donor babies who are adults now. And they talked about trauma, and they talked about lack of trauma. And the overriding variable for trauma was a feeling of being tricked or a feeling of not being told the full truth by your caregivers. And the consensus among the people that I was with at this event was, whatever the truth, kids can handle it in an age-appropriate way. Now, I'm not saying I fully agree, but certainly in the case of donor sperm or donor eggs or adoption, I think there's always an age-appropriate way to address that. And there are books to help you with that and everything else. With suicide, I don't know what I would do if, you know, chas v'shalom, I were ever in that situation. But I think the consensus, again, was like there's an age-appropriate way to tell your child where their parent has gone. And similarly, I mean, maybe with therapy and the right kind of guidance, there is an age-appropriate way to tell your daughter her origin story. Though, I mean, now she's already 13. Why rush it? Why rush it? Maybe now is the worst time to tell her. But thank you always for looking after each other and answering the questions that I can't. Here's a letter on taking his name or giving the children his name. And it comes with family dynamics that are very complicated. Catherine, my husband and I got pregnant with our first baby after two previous miscarriages, and I didn't take his last name when we got married. I normally wouldn't mind our children having his family surname, except my husband's mother has historically pushed for a very inappropriate relationship with my husband. So I don't want her having the same surname as my child when even I don't. I get that. For context, the family's surname was made up to convince the UK they were from Kosovo instead of Albania to immigrate as refugees in the early 2000s. My father-in-law chose the surname and is a longtime domestic abuser and a serial criminal throughout Europe. Whoa. Their bad relationship led to my husband and me adopting his teenage sibling recently because the home was such an unstable environment. Oh, wow. My mother-in-law has used my husband, her firstborn son, as her emotional support her entire life. She calls him her rock. When we got married, I voiced that this made me uncomfortable because she would call him at all hours of the night and day, crying and asking for advice on what to do, though never acting on his advice. This led to my husband not having much emotional energy left for me, and he has since placed very strict boundaries with his mom. However, when she comes to visit us in the US from London, I often hear her whispering to my husband, asking him to speak privately so she can continue to violate our boundaries and put him in the middle of her fucked up relationship with her husband. He's still her husband, this European criminal. She's made comments to me before that she deserves to use her son in this way and doesn't even feel like we're married since we eloped during COVID. When he and I spoke about choosing a new surname for ourselves and our children, she insisted on changing her surname with us and has voiced that her biggest goal in life is to follow us around the world. Is to follow us around the world wherever we live so she that can... Oh, this woman. Look, she has her own trauma and you're right. She shouldn't be using her firstborn son in this way. It leaves him very little space to be a child. And even though he's a grown man now, he's still her child. And she's constantly looking to him for like this close, close, intimate relationship and support and to be her rock. And she's violating the boundaries that he set with his wife. That's really bad. But this poor woman is struggling with her own identity, not to mention the cultural complexity that comes from her background, which I know very little about, but it sort of is instinctive to me that like a Kosovo mom-son relationship might have some extra, you know, like an Italian mother and son. It might be along those lines. Should I just change my last name so that we all have the same surname, including our upcoming baby? I really don't want my life or my child's life connected to my criminal father-in-law. Should I keep my last name and let the baby have the same surname as the rest of the family? I really don't want his mother having any reason more to say she doesn't feel like my husband and I are a family. Should my husband choose a new surname with me for ourselves and tell his mom we do not want her changing her name to ours? Jesus. Well, I feel like your main issue is this. It really struck a chord with me when you said, I really don't want his mother having any reason more to say she doesn't feel like my husband and I are a family. I feel like there are three of you in this relationship. It's the mother and the son and you. That's your husband. And maybe what you guys need is a wedding, like a traditional Kosovo wedding to show this woman that, or Albanian, I forget which one she is, but like a traditional wedding to be like, this is my wife, like get the net, mom. And then hopefully she can stop telling you that you're not married, which is really abusive, by the way, and stop clinging onto your son so much. And then, I mean, I think it's lovely to choose a name for yourself so that you're not tied to this abusive father-in-law, but why not let her be free of him too? Maybe her being free of his abuse will make her less clingy. Do you know what I mean? Like, because you guys are on this lifeboat away from a hell that I'm sure she endured long before your husband was born and long before you came on the scene. And she sees you guys getting out of it. You guys are a family now. You're having a baby. You're even having a new surname. And she's like, me too, me too. And she wants to follow you all around the world. Maybe she's not chasing you. She's trying to run away from him herself, you know? So if you let her in, you know, the more you let her in, the more maybe she won't push. And you go, all right, our new surname is, you know, Karapala. I don't know what your surname is going to be. And you could be like, you can have it too, but you need to respect that this is my husband. You're free of the abuse. He's free of it. This is our new family now. Fall back, player. Ah, here's a little light relief. Catherine, am I foolish for wanting lipo? I'm a 25-year-old girl who has struggled with body image issues for as long as she can remember. Oh no. I've always been really confident in my intelligence, humor, kindness, and, well, general disposition ever since I was a child. Somewhere in my adolescence, I developed a really horrible relationship with my body. I've never developed an eating problem. I just feel uncomfortable in my body. Frankly, I'm sick of the learn to love yourself as you are. It's not your body that's the problem. It's your mind advice. I will hypocritically always preach that to women and men myself, but for me, it doesn't feel like a mental issue. I just want less fat around my midriff. I'm totally with you because I know the right things to say and I know the empowering things to say. And no matter how often I hear that rhetoric, I can't escape from the culture that I grew up in and the images of women that are like written on the canvas of who I am. And I think it's okay to be realistic about your feelings towards your own body. You don't have to exist in this perfect woke conversation within your own mind. So definitely don't beat yourself up about that. I am by no means overweight, nor am I unhealthy. I eat well. I drink a little too much sometimes because I'm 25. I exercise 4 or 5 times a week. At one point in my life, around 3 years ago, I was at my ideal weight and I felt fantastic. So I know that dropping this weight will help me mentally. I don't think there should be any shame in wanting to lose weight as a non-overweight person, but it feels like there is. So I have pockets of fat that I've developed from overindulging for a while, and I'm okay with that. I was having a great time. Now, however, despite my healthy lifestyle, these fat pockets just won't go without basically starving myself, and I'm not prepared to do that. I've had coaches, nutritionists, PTs, been in calorific deficits, and nothing seems to help other than living off soup and my own tears. Well, we don't want you doing that. Recently, I've been looking into microlipo. This shouldn't be the top of my priorities from a money perspective, as I can't really afford it. I should be saving for a house. We should all be saving for a house. But I'm so miserable. I no longer enjoy social events or being intimate with my long-term boyfriend. He tells me all the time how beautiful I am, etc. But this isn't really about his opinion. It's about mine. Please, can you share your thoughts on this? Should I try and save for the surgery or am I being silly? Both. You are being incredibly silly and you know it. And that is the first step in being honest about what you're doing. It's like, it's not life or death. No, you don't need this. We all go into cosmetic surgery knowing that it's silly. But sometimes if it's going to make you happy, it's okay to spend your money on a silly thing. Of course, you know that even with local sedation, even if it's not a general anesthetic, any surgery opens you up to a very small risk of infection and is a small risk to your life. You know that. That risk becomes higher when you go and do it on the cheap or you go abroad where they're not so regulated. But I get what you're saying. And I mean, I was younger than you when I got breast implants that I couldn't really afford, but I ended up being rich. So like, if it's something that's going to make you really happy, you sound medically like the right candidate for it. Liposuction is not for people who are overweight. It's for people with localized fat deposits. You could look into your hormones because I think that I've read there might be some cortisol or like stress hormone imbalance when you collect fat around your middle. And at 25, you really shouldn't be collecting fat around your middle. So it might be worth just having your hormones checked. There is a drug that some of my friends with PCOS were on, and I forget what it's called, metformin. And then there's a natural version of that drug called berberine that in studies does very similar effects to the actual drug. And berberine is just like natural. And I'm not saying that anyone should take any medicine, but I found that in my own little research back long ago. And I don't think it really, I took berberine for a while. I don't really think it did anything, but look into it. It's cheap and cheerful and all natural. Take it at your own risk if you want. And I think it won't work unless you have this hormone imbalance. It sort of helps you metabolize sugar properly or insulin properly or something like that. I don't know. I'm not an expert. I am an idiot with a podcast, but I can tell you that you will do more damage to yourself thinking about this all the time and also beating yourself up over wanting something silly. It's like new jeans are silly and a trip to Spain is silly and new shoes are silly and drinking every weekend is silly. Like so many things in our lives, our silly, stupid lives, are there just for decoration and for enjoyment and to make us happy. And if a little bit of liposuction is going to make you happy, then you're not a bad person or anti-feminist or anti-woke for wanting that. Just please make sure that you go to the right place, like probably the Cadogan Clinic in London, though I don't know that for a fact. It's just people that I know have gone there. I mean, personally, I don't think British doctors really do liposuction that well. They're very conservative here from what I've seen. And there is this guy in Turkey called Dr. Serbulent, and I have seen his work in real life, and I think he's really talented, but I tried to let Bobby make Bobby let me go there. And he said, like, he just doesn't care what, who the doctor is or how reputable is. He's like, you're not going abroad for surgery. And I feel like that makes sense. So everything at your own risk. Don't ever beat yourself up for being silly. Life is about being silly without being so silly that you die. Thank you very much for listening. If you ever want to write me an email, it's tellingeverybodyeverything@gmail.com. If you have any news, any gossip, any pop culture tips, let me know those too. Andrew's always hot on the case, but I always want to know your thoughts on the podcast. If you want to come see me on tour, tickets are available now. A lot of people were writing in being like, why aren't you coming to Belfast? I am. Why aren't you coming to Cork? October. Why aren't you coming to Amsterdam? I'll be there. Just check your local Live Nation sites, and I'm probably coming to a town near you. I'll see you soon. Please look after yourselves. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.